Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And I want to start with nature this week because everything else is, well, it's just getting to be a bit much and it's hard to take. And I mean, who really wants to even deal with it all, right? So walking around with the dogs this morning, not this morning, actually, for the last month and a half. Been walking around with the dogs. Got a lot of oak trees in the backyard. And we've noticed a rather dramatic dropping and falling. And you're walking around and you hear a pop, drop. And there's acorns falling everywhere. And so I found out that this is a masting year. Are you familiar with a masting year? Yeah, masting year. I've got a story here from WFAA North Texas. There's an abundance of acorns falling, and you can get these stories from, I've got one from Vermont, one from Texas, one from California, everywhere, across the whole country. An abundance of acorns. This is a mast year, they call it. Phenomenon where nut-bearing trees produce an unusually large crop of acorns. And other nuts, whatever, you know, the whatever nuts the tree bears. It's a natural event that occurs every few years when trees synchronize their seed production. And so I'm researching this around the world because a colleague of mine had asked, is this a global phenomenon? And the stories I discovered in Europe, 2020 was a mast year. In Europe, so about 3 years ago. So it seems that this mast event, where the trees seem to synchronize and talk to each other, and then they all decide to put out a massive amount of seed together, it seems to circle the globe in something of an algorithm. And so in Europe, it crosses over the Atlantic. Now it's here. It's passed through America. We'll have to see if a year or two or three from now, the mast year moves across Asia. I couldn't tell on the Asian papers because I can't read the squiggly writing. And so I wasn't able to do the research. We'll have to reach out to one of our Asian bureaus and see if we can get a report on masting in Asia. Reading more from the story from the North Texas WFAA news outlet, they report that, quote, the exact reasons for mast years are not fully understood, unquote. And I would stop the reporters there and I would remind them that actually they are fully understood by God. They are fully understood and we can discover them and fully understand them if we look at the world, I should say, if we continue looking at the world rationally, as if a rational God created life for good and to be good. If we can look at the world that way, because apart from that, we're going to be led to believe that it's all quite mystical, and then everything becomes mystical. And then yada, 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 we will slaughter each other by the millions, by the tens of millions, by the hundreds of millions. It's only the appreciation for a rational, reasonable, loving God and the Christian worldview that has produced the scientific revolution, the peace that the West has known, the relative peace for the last 75 years. And that all seems to be teetering on the brink of a mystical, hysterical collapse. That's all. You know, not that it hasn't been a long time coming, by the way. This has been going on for a century. I know I only document things after 1968 because that's my frame of reference. It's like my dad always thought that the Sgt. Pepper's was the sign of the end of civilization when the Beatles released that record. That's his frame of reference. He was somewhat... My frame of reference is the Beastie Boys. When I saw that album was number one, I thought, surely the end is near. So anyway, we all have our frame of reference. But listen to this for a frame of reference. We go to the war file where Breitbart reports that two activists from a leftist Marxist homosexual organization called Just Stop Oil. These two activists used hammers to smash the glass protecting the Rokeby Venus painting at the National Gallery in London. This is in London, I'm sorry. This is a famous painting, the Rokeby, a painting called Venus. They smashed the glass with hammers earlier this month. That's right. And this particular painting, by the way, the Rokeby Venus, painted by 17th century painter Diego Velázquez. This isn't the first time that this piece of art has been attacked. This specific painting had previously been slashed with a meat cleaver by a suffragette activist in 1914. That's right, 1914. So the leftists have never shied away from physical violence. They never have. They're always ready to get violent. Ask Winston Churchill. I'm reading Winston Churchill's biography, a biography about Churchill. Each book is 4 inches thick. I just got through part one. I thought I was halfway through. Turns out it's a three-part biography. It's like 12 inches of biography on with a number 6 font. Anyway, it's an interesting biography because it's based primarily on journal entries, diary entries, and letters, documents by Churchill and a bunch of other people, like everybody. What they wrote in their letters to each other and what they wrote in their diaries. Anyway, it's very well done. Called The Last Lion, if you want to check it out. It's a good 2.5 year project to read. But I'm reading and I remembered from the biography that I just am reading that Churchill himself was physically attacked by a maniacal left-wing suffragette. That's right. A hysterical suffragette whipped him in the face with a whip, a dog whip. I didn't know they had dog whips. But apparently they do. I think it's for fox hunting where they... Anyway, it's a nasty little whip. Cut Churchill's face wide open. He bled all over the place. Shocked British society. Anyway, Churchill, he refused to press charges against the hysterical suffragette. Went into the parliament and voted against the bill giving women the right to vote. That's right. So, I mean, that was back when... But still, even if he didn't press charges, you would have thought the state would have said, well, wait a second, you can't whip someone in the face and not be charged. But England was already well in decline back then. So, anyway, the idea of the modern Marxist homosexuals, perverts, I shouldn't say homosexuals, they're just sex perverts. That's what these are, these leftist organizations. They're mostly young people who are sex perverts who are just trying to figure out a way to get around other people like them, and they tend to congregate in these type of piles. And so they pile in together on various projects like Just Stop Oil and Free Palestine and Black Lives Matter. All of that. They're all the same bunch of communist perverts. That's all. If perverts first... The communism is just a way for them to gather in groups. All right, so let's. That's it. You got the climate crazies with the smashing of the glass and the slashing Churchill's face. And the left has never been shy about violence. A college professor Lue Alnaji. It's hard to pronounce it, guys. You got all the consonants are in the wrong order. and there's too many vowels. Lue Alnaji. He's a college professor of something, was arrested last week, charged with involuntary manslaughter in the death of Paul Kessler. Kessler's a Jew who was protesting a bunch of terrorist supporters. So there was a march supporting the terrorists of Hamas going on in Thousand Oaks, California. And a few Jews had the stones to just show up and say, we're going to stand up against you. We're against you. Well, Professor Alnaji hit the Jew in the face with a bullhorn, and the Jew died hours later at a local hospital. So basically, you have a terrorist protester kill a Jew in Thousand Oaks, California, in America, in 2013. He was a professor at Moore Park College, and so I want to read. Moore Park College is a... it's a publicly funded university. You can borrow money from a bank. The money will be guaranteed by the government. And you can attend school at Moore Park for approximately 4 years and come out the other end having been brainwashed by the likes of Lue Alnaji, who killed a Jew at a protest in America. Here is the diversity, equity, and inclusion statement by Moore Park College. Moore Park College is deeply committed to ongoing efforts to cultivate a welcoming campus, a climate that is inclusive, an environment where students, faculty, staff, and administrators feel supported and safe. We are committed to healing historical traumas, eliminating socioeconomic gaps through more equitable resource distribution, improving the learning experience to ensure students' success, and building mutual understanding and respectful relationships. The work of the campus community in this area has been intentional in how we live the principles of the anti-racism, inclusion, equity, and social justice. Well, that's the fusion of DIE. And Islam is right there at Moore Park College. Imagine that. Sign him up, Mom. I want to go to school so I can get a degree. Get a good job. Well, Moore Park's a good school, we hear, Johnny. Okay, so let's go from the fusion of the Marxist perverts and Islamists to... well, this is just, I don't even know what to call this. CNN had a reporter embedded with Hamas when they launched the slaughter of innocent people on October 7th. There were journalists embedded. Do you remember back during the wars that the Bush Wars, I guess they'll be called in history, that the troops would go in with the tanks and they would just slaughter the Arabs embarrassingly all over the deserts of Iraq. And our troops would, the urinalists would be embedded with the troops. That means they would dress up with the flak jacket and the helmet and no rifle, just a pen and a camera. And bravely, the embedded troops would go in. And they would send back news feed to CNN and Fox News, who would then take that war footage of people being killed and people killing other people and turn that into a profitable news product. The embedding of reporters. I think George H.W. Bush and the government media complex of the early 1990s first perfected the art of embedding reporters and turning war into a profitable news item. But anyway, and it wasn't just CNN, by the way. There was a report by a media watchdog group called Honest Reporting. Reports that here are the names, okay? The names Hassan Eslaya, along with Youssef Massoud, Ali Mahmoud, and Hatam Ali, were four photojournalists who were embedded with Hamas during the October 7th assaults. And CNN and the Associated Press used some of the footage that the embedded... what do you call these? Well, if you embed with terrorists, you are a terrorist. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Yes, that's right. If you embed with a terrorist, you are a terrorist. CNN has reported that they have suspended all ties with Hassan Eslaya, the embedded terrorist reporter. They say, yes, his work for us is done. Well, actually, I added that part because that's the truth. Despicable, horrible, par for the course. Yes, that's right. In fact, I have a report here regarding Islamists from the Alaska Bureau. Our Alaska Bureau correspondent has noted that there is a revival in the air. A revival, that's right. Unfortunately, it is an Islamic revival. That's right. You remember that the revival spilled into the streets of Washington, D.C. a couple of weeks ago. And then right into the DNC headquarters last week, right? Chasing scared Democrats, right? Screaming Allahu Akbar, chasing terrified Democrats from the DNC headquarters. The Islamic revival spilled into... That's right, they were all chanting that this revival could go from the river to the sea or something like that. Thank you to our Alaska Bureau for that. Right? Do you get it? The Potomac? And anyway, that's pretty witty is all. And by the way, on the heels of that, this past week, a large group of pro-Hamas demonstrators shut down the California Democrat Party's convention there in Sacramento. They're having their big convention there, their annual pile in Sacramento, and the terrorist supporters actually invaded the convention center and chased all the Democrat delegates from the building and took over the building. And then they had nothing to do because the one pile chased the other pile out of the building, forgetting that the whole point was to get the two piles together because they're actually friends. But here's the thing. The moneyed old, the old money interest of the Democrat Party has a significant financial interest in giving lip service to the state of Israel because they get a lot of money from old, stupid leftist Jews. I know, isn't it weird that stupid rich Jews would give money to the Democrat Party that's destroying America, which is the only thing that, and they love Israel, and the only thing that preserves Israel is America, and the stupid old rich Jews give money to, it's just weird. Human nature is really weird. You know, the self-destructive, almost suicidal nature of godless people is remarkable, and it's worth studying and pondering and trying to figure out so that we can figure out an angle. Like, how do you get through? Let's say you're at the Democrat convention in Sacramento, you're at the gate there, and you're a Christian, and you want to preach the gospel. How do you get through to a Hamas protester screaming Allahu Akbar, chasing Democrats from the hall? I mean, it's just tough to find an angle to introduce the gospel to that particular guy. Maybe you wait. Maybe you wait until all the Democrats have been chased from the building and the Hamas supporters have screamed Allahu Akbar and from the river to the sea until they're hoarse and they're just tired and they're kind of... And then you bring them a bottle of water and then maybe you can get through to them. Because even the police can't seem to stop this. Listen to this from the Global Flinch file. You've heard of the Big Flinch? It's a global phenomenon. Protesters this past week marched through the streets of London screaming Allahu Akbar, which right there, you should be arrested. You shouldn't be allowed to scream that out. I'm sorry. Not in the West. I mean, if you want to walk down the streets of Baghdad, maybe that's allowed. Not here, my friend. No. But they did. This was in London. And the protesters, after screaming Allahu Akbar and from the river to the sea, basically endorsing the murder of innocent people, full-throated screaming about it, they climbed one of central London's key war memorials. And this was this past Wednesday night. While police, listen to this report, Breitbart reports that the protesters climbed the war memorials while police appeared to look on. So, and then they link to a video where you watch it happen. And just a note to the Breitbart urinalists, the police don't appear to look on. They actually just look on. It's in the video that you linked in the story. So anyway, just... there's been criticism from some of the few British citizens who still have testes and a bit of testosterone that the officers failed to act. So you're not allowed to deface war memorials in England. And there are actually laws about breaching the peace that are on the books. And people think that maybe the police should have stopped the desecration of the war memorials by the hysterical Marxist pervert. They call them protesters. Protesters, these are rioters. But anyway, we already know there's no longer a rioter. Except for the January 6th people. That video is interesting. Have you had a chance to see some of that? With the shaking of the hands between the cops and the protest, it's extraordinary. So the psychological operation, the cover up that the January 6th committee perpetrated against just right and wrong and truth, and they should all be arrested. They should be arrested for what they did. Talk about inciting violence. Anyway, I'll leave that aside. That'll be a bigger story next week as we get to see the 44,000 hours worth of video. 43,484 hours of it, peaceful, just crazy, some stupid, some silly. Some of it with the cops de-handcuffing the alleged protester and then fist bumping with the... What's that all about? And anyway, we'll get more into that. I'm sure that'll... But back to England, where the police flinched from the protesters defacing the war memorial. Police issued a statement because nobody was willing to stand up in public after such an embarrassing episode. And they said that no arrests were made because there is no law explicitly making it illegal to climb on a memorial. Unquote. Anyway, just a week ago, 92 protesters, so-called far-right protesters, were preemptively arrested by the police to prevent a breach of the peace, which is legal in England. The police can just think something is going to breach the peace and they can start arresting people, which is good. It should be that way. But when it comes to the hysterical Marxist perverts, it's almost as if someone is ordering the police to stand down. And you start to wonder if maybe the people in charge of England and the governing officials in America, Europe, Canada, you know, the West, it's like, have they switched sides? Are they working for the other side? It seems that way sometimes. In fact, let's see, where was this? This was in America. This was in America where the FBI... Well, there's a reporter named Sarah Fields. She's a journalist with an outfit called The Publica Now. And she's been working on stories from the open border down in Texas. And the FBI expressed some interest in her journalistic work. That's right. They attempted to arrange a private meeting at the FBI office in Tyler, Texas, with this journalist, Sarah Fields. Yeah, that's right. They wanted to talk to her about her coverage of the violence and specifically human trafficking along the U.S.-Mexico border. Fields had previously revealed that the Mexican cartels, listen to this. So she has detailed reports of how Mexican drug dealers would have pregnant women cut open. They would pull their babies out, leave the babies on the ground, and stuff the pregnant woman's stomach with drugs, and then send the woman across the border.
What?
That sounds like a bad movie. Like, yeah. That can't really happen, can it?
Real?
She says it's real. Now, that part of the story I have not been able to investigate because you can't find much about this woman anywhere anymore because she's gone into hiding.
Urban legend.
Sounds like an urban legend. Well, anyway, that's one of her reports. Another report that she filed, listen to this. Another one of her reports claimed that there was a Hamas training camp at the U.S.-Mexico border. And the FBI, suddenly after connecting with her, she wanted to tell them about the women being exploited, and they wanted to know about the Hamas training camp. And she started getting the feeling that they wanted to know her sources. And so she said, you know what? I don't think I want to meet with you. Uh-huh. Well, they had been talking over the phone. Agents said they weren't comfortable discussing any details over the phone. And they wanted to meet her in person. And she said, you know, I don't think I want to meet you in person. And then the FBI agent showed up at her house. And they wanted to meet. And so what do you do when the cops show up asking questions that the bad guys would be asking if they were wanting to uncover how you found out about the bad guys? That's kind of scary. When the FBI shows up and they start asking you things that you start wondering, are you working for the bad guys? I mean, it seems like when it comes to the FBI, if I'm not mistaken, is a direct descendant of Elliot Ness and the Untouchables, a group of men recruited by the government to go after the mafia back in the Prohibition days, because everyone had been bribed and everyone was owned and everyone was working for the gangsters. And so the government went out and recruited Elliot Ness and the Untouchables, and from that was born the FBI. And now it seems the Untouchables have not only been touched, but they just reached out and touched an American for the bad guys. And so she has posted about this, and she's very concerned. People are concerned for her because... I mean, I hate to say this, but it looks like the FBI might rat this lady out to the cartels. Because, why? Well, the Untouchables are touched. Sad. Now, from there, we go to San Francisco. You want to speak about Untouchable? Yeah, how about a railing along the front of any building in San Francisco? That's untouchable. I mean, unless you've got unless your immunity is really strong, you don't want to touch anything like that, right? So, this is from the You've Got to Be Kidding file. That's right. It's the You've Got to Be Kidding file, where Xi Jinping visited San Francisco. And Gavin Newsom actually swept, not only swept the homeless people off the street, They cleaned the street and then put up barricades to keep the homeless out so that the streets would all look clean when Chairman Xi walked through them. And they did this in broad daylight in front of God and everybody. They literally created a Potemkin village for the communists. The Americans created a Potemkin village for the communists so that they could make the communists think that everything was okay in America. Which is, if you don't know what a Potemkin village is, look it up and it just you'll get the irony. Gavin Newsom responded to a backlash over this Potemkin village at a press conference, and he said it's true that San Francisco has been cleaned up for all those fancy leaders who are coming to town. He says, you've heard that? That we're cleaning up for all the fancy leaders? He said, well, you've heard that because it's true. But he went on to say, but it's also true for months and months and months prior to APEC, we've been having different conversations. At which point, Kamala Harris popped up out of the lectern and gave him a handful of pills and a party hat before she disappeared in a puff of smoke and glitter. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. It's Kamala Harris and Gavin Newsom's theme song. Theme song for the entire governing apparatus of Western civilization at this point. They've lost their minds right in front of us, and we seem helpless to do anything about it because of, well, just the nature of things. You know, I'm just one guy, you're just one guy, one gal. What can we do? We just go along and we try to survive and we try to have a positive impact on our little circle of influence. That's and then I do the show. So, you know, there, that helps me cope. So we go from there to the Voice in the Wilderness file where the Daily Reporter, I'm sorry, the Daily Caller. Okay. So let me get my bearings here. I'll try to read English, which I've done before. The Daily Caller reports that schools are being infiltrated by gay clubs. That's right. Genders and Sexuality Alliance clubs are popping up in schools all across the nation, according to a new investigation by a new group that's going to square away these schools finally once and for all. Parents Defending Education. And they have discovered the shocking news that homosexualist clubs are popping up throughout schools all across America. That's right, GSA clubs. So I read this story, and listen to this. It's an investigation first revealed exclusively to the Daily Caller by the brave investigators at Parents Defending Education. So I read the story and I thought, well, wait a second. What about the Gay Straight Alliance clubs that I reported on in the late 1990s that were infiltrating all the schools? It's even the same initials, GSA. Now it's Gender and Sexualities Alliance. Back then it was the Gay Straight Alliance. I'm talking 1998, 99. This is an exclusive to the Daily Caller that the schools have been infiltrated by a bunch of perverts? Well, let's read on because this is shocking. The Daily Caller reports that these clubs are actually indoctrination camps. Then they're using kids as activists. Yeah, that's all according to Ryan, a researcher at the Parents Defending Education group that no doubt sent out a fundraising letter off this story right here. This story appeared on the internet. A fundraising letter was ginned out within 24 hours with headlines and the whole... And parents are shocked. What are you talking about? Gay and bisexual and transgendered clubs are in my kid's school, not Johnny's school, is it? Well, no. No, Johnny's in a charter school. It's a good school. Don't worry. Anyway, so the homosexuals... I shouldn't say that. I keep saying that, but it's so far beyond that. Let's just start calling them perverts, okay? We're just going to leave it at perverts. The perverts began infiltrating the schools in the early 20th century, and by the 1970s, they had utterly infiltrated the schools. And so for the better part of 50 years, the schools have been run by a pile of perverts. All the public schools, all of them. Yes, there are some good, great teachers. Yes, there are a few, of course, and probably all of your kids. That's are all. But the administrators, the schools, and most of the teachers are Marxist perverts. So that's the voice in the wilderness, because we were called haters and radicals and conspiracy theorists 25 years ago when we said, hey, the schools are all full of a bunch of pervs who want to molest the kids. And people thought, well, you're crazy. Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, from there, do we even want to talk about elections? Is there any point? Oh, just for the irony of it. Up in Minneapolis, where the big flinch started, I started watching this video production called "The Fall of Minneapolis." Anyway, it's really eerie. It is all the body cam footage of the actual arrest of George Floyd, and it's worth a watch. Anyway, it's called "The Fall of Minneapolis." I haven't gotten through it yet because just watching the whole thing with George Floyd. It hurts. It hurts to watch that happen, knowing what's going to happen. It's painful to watch the whole thing. But anyway, in Minneapolis this past week, they had elections. Mm-hmm. The Democrat Socialists of America won 6 out of 7 of the city council elections up there. Or I'm sorry, 6 out of 7 of the elections. They claimed their fourth seat on the city council there in Minneapolis. That's the Democrat Socialists of America had faced some criticism for a recent statement blaming Israel's apartheid regime for Hamas's attack on the Jewish state. That's just the tip of the iceberg. These are hardcore communist perverts who should all be arrested. You should not be able to advocate publicly communism in America. That should be illegal. You should be arrested. I know we have freedom of speech, right? But you're not allowed to advocate for criminal behavior publicly. And communism is organized crime dressed up as government. And we learned that for 50 years. And how we're tolerating it is starting to annoy me, and it makes me angry. And so I need to move on to another story that will make me feel better. You look through the stack for us. I already did the mask story. I shouldn't have started with that. I should have waited until I was really on the edge. Yeah, I don't know that there's, okay, so let's just continue to plow through the incredibly depressing, but sometimes enlightening and sometimes, entertaining news. We've got another traitor uncovered in the Pentagon, an aide, let's see, called Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Oh, no, wait, that's not her name. That's her boss. Ariane Tabatabai is in the Pentagon right now, and she works for Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. She has retained her security clearance and her position as chief of staff. Listen to her position. Chief of Staff to the Pentagon's Assistant Secretary for Defense for Special Operations and Low-Intensity Conflict. How do you cover up a traitor and a communist? Bury her under that many titles in the bureaucracy. And nobody will know that she's been a cancer until the patient dies. She's been in the Pentagon for years. Tabatabi. So she was now has been discovered to have engaged in a covert campaign to smear Iran's leading opposition groups. And she worked for Robert Malley, who was forced out of the Pentagon because he's such an obvious traitor that even the traitors in charge had to charge him with something because it was so blatant and obvious. Malley's security clearance was revoked this past spring over mishandling of classified information. Yeah, that means obviously working directly for Iran. This is one of his assistants. She's been working against opposition groups in Iran from her position of authority in the United States government. So people in our government are working for the enemy and working against people who should be our allies. The people in Iran who want to topple the Islamist government there should be our allies in the effort to restrain and eventually overthrow that government, but our government's been infiltrated by the enemy. Speaking of all that, let's just go to just a flat-out low-life lawyer. And for a picture of a flat-out low-life lawyer, we go to one Jenna Ellis. Jenna Ellis was charged with a crime, and when you read it, you were like, well, wait a minute, none of this is a crime. How is she charged with a crime? And then she was pressured to plead guilty to the non-crime, and now she has testified that she received information after the election of 2020 that Trump was not going to leave the White House. No way, that's right. She said she heard a remark from a fellow named Dan Scavino, who was an employee of the Trump Organization, a member of the inaugural campaign. And here's her testimony. She said, and he, like, said to me, like, kind of excited, he said, we're, like, not going to, like, leave. And I said, what do you, like, mean? And he said, like, the boss is not going to leave under any circumstances. We are just going to stay in power. And I said, like, it doesn't quite work that way, you realize. And he said, we don't care. So this is Jenna Ellis reporting on a conversation she allegedly had with some low-end, some flunky nobody ever heard about. And she claims that conversation happened with Scavino on December 19th. So Jenna Ellis has been paid off or somehow compromised to offer this testimony that's so fake it's ludicrous. So that there will be something that the news media can grab onto to say that Donald Trump said that he was not going to leave office. Despite the fact that Donald Trump actually left office after the inauguration on January 20th. Oh, and by the way, Jenna Ellis, low-life lawyer, made remarks that belie her own dishonesty here. That's right. She said on December 28th, now she says she had this conversation on December 19th where the Trump operative said, we don't care, Trump is staying. And Jenna was like, no, you can't do that. That all allegedly happened on December 19th. She said publicly on December 28th, quote, President Trump should never concede the election, said Jenna Ellis. Like a week after all the, she was so scared they wouldn't leave. She's probably going to claim that they were holding her hostage. That's right. They had my family in a basement. That's right. Don Trump Jr. had my mom tied up. He was whipping her with a rubber hose. Anyway. So either Jenna believed, like every other, like, non-leftist normal person, that the election was obviously stolen, right? Or she's just another empty skirt parasite. So common in the corporate world and in the government. Jenna Ellis is just another low-life parasite who will say anything for a paycheck. Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Yes, yes. Jenna, leave. Exit stage left, right. Exit any way out of here is. All right. So we move on from Jenna Ellis to a rather interesting story. A different woman. Her name is Ayaan Hirsi Ali. I've covered her from time to time over the last 20 years. This is from the Hopeful Religion File. Ayaan Hirsi Ali has been an advocate for a reform of the Islamic religion. She was a Muslim. She became an atheist. Now she has declared herself a Christian. And that makes big news in the Western media, especially among those who give lip service to Christianity, like the reporters over at The Federalist and others. The reason she gives for her conversion, according to the Federalists, may raise some eyebrows. She says, quote, part of the answer is global. Mm-hmm. The West is under threat from authoritarianism, global Islamism, and woke ideology. And she said she had appealed to atheism. Had rejected Islam, appealed to atheism to find the answers to these global threats, and found that actually Christianity is the only answer. Now, the Federalist reporters say that she is wrong to think Christianity is primarily about countering those forces or preserving civilization. They say that Western civilization arose as a byproduct of the Christian faith, the sole object of which is communion with Almighty God by means of salvation through Jesus Christ. Freedom of speech, rule of law, and human rights are fruits of the Christian faith, but they are not what Christianity is about. And the Federalist reporters make a good point there. That's not what Christianity is about. And they go on to question whether or not Ayaan Hirsi Ali's conversion is legitimate, or is it just political, or is she misunderstanding Christianity? And there's a good chance that some of all of that is true. The Christian faith, they keep calling it the Christian faith, by the way, which I kind of don't like that. That sounds kind of Catholic to me. I wonder, I don't know who the reporter is. I have to look him up and see if he's a Catholic. They keep talking about the Christian faith is about this, the Christian faith is about that. They only say Christianity once in a while. Anyway, in fact, I would say that Ayaan Hirsi Ali appealing to, or I should say, the appeal of Christianity to Ayaan Hirsi Ali is an appeal that she came to grips with because she's so afraid of everything else that's going on. Islamism terrifies her. The woke perverts taking over civilization terrifies her. She found that atheism doesn't answer the questions in her heart and in her mind about what is life all about. And so there's an appeal to Christianity that she latches onto, even though she barely understands Christianity. And she's hoping maybe it'll just be something to save her from the catastrophic things that she sees going on around her. And I would say to that, The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And so if that's all you understand is everything else is terrifying, I'm going to latch on to this, that's as good a place to start as any. You know, because a lot of times it takes, when you're fat and comfortable and everything's going well, a lot of times you don't even think about the afterlife or God or heaven and hell or giving an account to your creator. You just go along. So Hirsi got scared. I keep calling her Hirsi. I don't know why. Ayaan got scared. Anyway, the author here in the Federalist article, by appealing to the Christian faith, I mean, I guess I don't want to criticize him too much. Anyway, I hope that Ayaan Hirsi Ali's conversion to Christianity is sincere. Even if it's not theologically deep at this point, it is promising and hopeful. It's a hopeful religion. And so I just want to say to the reporter at the Federalist that it's Christianity. It's not the Christian faith. The Christian faith is a social construct, like the Catholic Church, which is mostly very far removed from Christianity. But the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And if people are afraid, they... afraid, poor, desperate people often come to genuine faith. And so maybe Ayaan is just starting out on that path. And if she wants any of our input, she can watch our Bible study every week. She's welcome. She's invited. All right, now we move from religion to politics, the two subjects you're not supposed to talk about that make up this entire show all the time. From the Naked Ambition file, Doran Fink, started his FDA career as a clinical reviewer in 2010, and then he worked his way all the way up to Deputy Director of the Division of Vaccines and Related Product Application. That's within the office of the FDA's Office of Vaccine Research and Review. How does a nakedly ambitious parasite hide in a bureaucracy? He hides under a big pile of words like that. During COVID-19, Dr. Fink was a prominent voice on vaccines, and they go through his whole more and more he did for the vaccines, and this, he changed the composition, should they authorize boosters? He was involved in all the discussions and deaths and both. A basic bureaucratic tour de force on behalf of Moderna and the vaccines, and now, voila, according to Fink's most recent LinkedIn profile, he left the FDA in December of 22 and got a job at Moderna as head of Transitional Medicine and Early Clinical Development Infectious Diseases. Got that gig in February 2023 after shepherding through Moderna's vaccine. Now, wait. Dr. Jaya Goswami was an officer at the FDA's Center for Biologics Evaluation and Research back in March of 2020. March of 2020, that was just before, oh yeah. Goswami was responsible for determining whether Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine's clinical data met regulatory standards and blah, 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 and yada, 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 and yada, 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 yada. And Goswami's latest LinkedIn profile says she left the FDA and began working for Moderna the very same month that Doran Fink started his job. She's now the Director of Clinical Development in Infectious Diseases. Don't go into too much of what that means. Anyway, according to Moderna, the company has made about $40 billion from sales of its COVID-19 vaccine, which at the time these two shepherded it through the government, was Moderna's only product. Shockingly, Moderna was a big money loser right up until COVID. Huh. And the two people who helped, well, this is just the two that we know about. There's probably 24 people who'll be working at Moderna for the rest of their lives, saying and doing anything for a paycheck. It's just sad. All right, now speaking of just sad, should I even do this story? So I have a story here about Kid Rock where he calls himself a conservative and a Christian and how he wants to end the boycott on Bud Light. But I'm not going to do the story because it's just too yucky. Because he's just too, yeah. Instead... just please. And he was on Sean Hannity's show. It's like triple yuck. I can't do it. I mean, you people who watch Sean Hannity and Fox News and take in that as if that's even real, that's it. We as Christians need to stand up for Bud Light. That's Sean Hannity's like, yeah, you're right. Meanwhile, let's go to a report on democracy in America here. Judge Amy Totenberg has issued a decision. She's issued a decision. This is according to trendingpolitics.com. The judge, Amy Totenberg, has issued a decision concurring that there is reason to believe that electronic voting machines used by Georgia have substantial flaws. Now, it's hard to understand what that even means. There's such convoluted language. It's all legalism, legal mumbo jumbo. Basically, Judge Amy Totenberg decided that the voting machines in Georgia are suspect. If to put it simply, which we're not allowed to do anymore. She says that the voting machines in Georgia are so suspicious that they may have violated people's constitutional rights to vote. Okay, now, if I read the article, you'd not even understand that that's what just happened, but it is. Anyway, reporters are now so obviously propagandists for the bureaucratic leftist state. You know, the thing about bureaucracies and bureaucrats is they always use lots of extra words, right? Judge Amy issued a decision. Instead of just saying Judge Amy decided... No, she has issued a decision. There's like three or four extra words that we don't need there. But that's, you know, it's like, you know, it's like the airlines are governed by the FAA. And the FAA issues rules about every little thing they have to do. And that's how you end up with, you know, you're standing there waiting. We're going to start pre-boarding. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to start pre-boarding for veterans, people in uniform, and families with children under three. We can begin pre-boarding now. And you stand there and you watch people boarding the plane. And you think, this isn't pre-boarding. They're actually boarding. Why do you call it pre-boarding? And how can you separate pre-boarding from boarding? Who draws the line? Well, the FDA draws the line. And there's just a whole lot of extra words and a whole lot of extra everything going on. And that's what's happened here. But bottom line, folks, a judge in Georgia has said that the election looks fake enough that we're going to continue a trial. We're going to have a trial. Meanwhile, in Massachusetts, officials are investigating allegations of voter fraud after, listen to this, after video footage appearing to show a woman removing ballots from a mailbox. Folks, I watched the video. It doesn't appear to show it. It shows it. It shows it right there on the video. I mean, can't we agree on what we see with our own eyes? Anyway, the footage came from a local man who had showed up to vote. And he was told he had already voted. And he said, no, I haven't voted. They said, oh, yeah, we got your mail-in vote. He said, no. And that was on top of another allegation from another woman who showed up in person to vote. And she was told, well, no, we've already received your mail-in vote. Go home, sweetheart. She said, well, wait, if that was forged. And they all kind of smirked and wondered what she could. What do you mean by forged? What are you, conspiracy theorists? What are you, writing a spy novel? Anyway, she also filed a police report, at which point everyone in the room laughed at her and chuckled. They were like, ha, the police. They work for us. What are you talking about? Anyway, meanwhile, I watched this video. I don't know if this is true, but I want to know. There was a vote for the Pennsylvania Supreme Court was decided by 200,000 votes. I watched a video. So in Pennsylvania, you can watch the actual vote totals as they're tabulated by these computers now. They have video feeds of the votes. And there's a real-time video feed, allegedly, that shows 350,000 votes for the Republican literally disappear. It goes up to like 420,000. He drops all the way to 200-something. It's like, what's going on? And then... So the votes are just removed, and the Democrat wins by 200,000 votes. Anyway, so, folks, the democracy that you have worshipped is now a weapon that is going to be used to destroy you. It's going to be used to destroy your civilization by the criminals that empowered themselves by winning the never-ending popularity contest that we were all taught to worship as if it were sacred. It's not sacred. It's utterly corrupt. And they're going to do it right in front of our faces, in broad daylight, in front of God and everybody. And because we've all been taught to worship tolerance and diversity, and we've all been taught by the states, by the politicians, by the media, by the pop culture, that we just can't really be certain of anything. And to assert that we are certain of anything is somehow racist, homophobic, sexist, somethingist, it's baddest, you're rudest, you're not nicest. If you assert that you know anything to be true and a fact, you're just mean. And not only are you mean, you're arrogant. And you're a colonizer. And even worse, to assert that anything's true. And so because of that, because of all of that, democracy is going to be used to bludgeon liberty and freedom and God-fearing people all across Western civilization, and the civilization will be killed. And you know what? It might be what we deserve. Listen to this. From LifeSite News, Indy Gregory was a baby who was diagnosed with a mitochondrial disease as a little bitty baby. Doctors at Nottingham University's hospital in England, that's England's National Health Service, their socialist, communist, Marxist health system, claim that Indy needed to be removed from life support, listen to this, so as not to prolong the process of her death. Her parents disagreed. They said Indy was disabled, not dying. The hospital shouldn't remove life support. But the hospital is part of the socialist racket that has that it's their money, right? So they get to decide. Well, the parents made a request from the government of Italy, and the government of Italy, Giorgia Meloni, granted citizenship to the little girl, and the Vatican Children's Hospital offered to take care of the girl. And so you would think that the National Health Service, now that money's not an issue, that they would send the baby to Italy. But that's not what happened. Mr. Justice Robert Peel ruled that there is nothing to suggest that Indy Gregory's prognosis would be beneficially altered by the Italian hospital's treatment. And they made a ruling that Indy's life support should be removed. The life support was removed against the will of the parents, and Indy died. Indy was murdered on November 13th by the government of England, the National Health Service, and without an appropriate effort by the government of Italy. So if Giorgia Meloni actually thought this was a life and death issue, she could have done something much more dramatic than simply issuing a statement. She could have had people show up. She could have flown in a plane. She could have really made this, but she didn't because, well, maybe she didn't have time. You know what? Maybe this will make Giorgia Meloni tender-hearted enough so that the next time something like this happens, she'll do more to do what's right, and we'll get the attention of the world so that we can put the gospel in front of them and let them know that if you keep behaving like this, you're all going to die. And you're going to die in your sins, and you're going to straight to hell with jet rockets, and you're going to suffer forever. And we don't want that for you. That's the Weekly Worldview for this week. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio, and I want to thank you for being here. Should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.